Spark Your Fire podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host, David Shee. With me today is Jazz Dana. And in our studio, we've got another very special guest today. After last week, we did a bit of Melbourne update. We thought this time we'll shift our focus towards the north on the Queensland side of things because, I mean, personally, I'm invested in Queensland and also Jazz likewise as well. So, and I'm sure many investors will be very, very interested to know what's currently happening on the ground currently on Queensland. So, Jazz, who is our special guest today?
Thanks, David. Good listeners. We've got Melinda on the show today from Queensland Streamline Property Buyers. Melinda, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. And I appreciate being, you know, invited to join you today.
Oh, it's awesome to have you on the show. Queensland market is a very interesting market that we have. A lot of investors are currently active in the area, and we keep hearing that Queensland market is going to take off at some point, but it never does. So that's why you are here today to give us a bit of a guidance and maybe shed some light of what's happening in that market, because you're on the ground all the time, obviously dealing with the real estate agents and the investors and the first home buyers and who not.
Yes.
But before we go into that, just on your background, Melinda, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys have been in the construction space for the last 20 years, property development space for the last 8 years, and you also do run your buyer's advocacy for the last 2 to 3 years, correct?
Yeah, look, that's right. I come from a construction background, so my husband is a licensed builder, and that was the area that we started in. After a few years, we realised that we really wanted to move into the space where we were the developers, so we were started our property development business about 8 years ago now, and that was in the residential space in some of the inner city suburbs of Brisbane, and really moved into the buyer's advocacy space to help other buyers in the Brisbane market, because what we found was a lot of people really didn't understand property and what drives property markets and, you know, how to find a good site, not just for a house, but also an investment or a development. So that's what sort of moved us through those transitions, and certainly very active property investors throughout Brisbane as well, both in residential and also the industrial space.
Tell us a little bit about what's happening in the market, in the Queensland market, Melinda. Just last week we had Melbourne market update, and obviously the things are not that great at the moment in Melbourne, but Melbourne has seen and Sydney has seen its growth over the last few years, whereas Queensland is a little bit always behind when it comes to Melbourne and Sydney. So tell us a little bit what's happening in the market, especially from a investor perspective, if you're trying to invest and you're in other states. Give us some ground over here.
Yeah, look, Brisbane, I think, has been at the start of the recovery cycle when we look at the property clock for a number of years. And, you know, we still have such a high level of price disparity between Brisbane and the southern markets of of Sydney and Melbourne. There's a lot of upside opportunity for Brisbane. And look, it hasn't yet eventuated, but we've got record infrastructure spending at the moment on big projects that will drive employment opportunities throughout southeast Queensland. We've also got accelerating population growth. So whilst we've got increasing numbers, the rate at which they are increasing coming to the southeast corner is getting greater. So when we've got, you know, economic indicators or economic growth, we've also got accelerating population growth, it puts upward pressure on demand for housing. Now, obviously, you know, those factors alone don't drive property prices. We've also got to look at the supply of property or the supply of housing. And we've sort of been struggling a little bit with oversupply, particularly in the unit market for the last few years. But we've seen that actually has been absorbed largely by the increasing rate of population growth. So I think that there was a lot of speculation that our unit market would crash, but that's not happened. We've seen some softening in prices in the unit market, but nothing like it was predicted to be. So now we've got a situation where, you know, a lot of the units that were approved to be built have stopped. You know, they've been put on hold. And forecasters are predicting that we're going to have an undersupply in that market over the next 2 to 3 years. So when we've got limited supply or diminishing supply, as well as increasing demand for homes, that generally puts upward pressure on prices. And we're certainly seeing in some pockets that upward pressure already starting to happen.
Melinda, which areas are the investors really focusing on, or which areas are prime for growth, basically?
Look, I think anywhere where we've got increasing opportunity to access employment, we'll see, you know, positive prospects for growth. Now, we've just looking at the latest CoreLogic data that was released on April 1, just yesterday, Brisbane still has 4 of the top 10 sub-regions for capital growth across all sub-regions in Australia. Now, in saying that, and I'm just looking at the numbers at the moment, Brisbane West, Brisbane East, Moreton Bay South and Moreton Bay North are among those top 10. We're not seeing huge growth when we look at median values, but there's markets within markets, and we're certainly seeing some pockets where days on market are, you know, really low and the demand for homes is very high. So, you know, anywhere that I think you're on a transport node and there's employment opportunities or access to employment opportunities, we see as being prime opportunities for investors, particularly moving forward in the Brisbane market. So we're quite active for investors along train corridors. There's a proposed metro, there's a metro that is going to be constructed. The funding is already in place. We know where that line is going through. So any investors, depending on their price point, we're placing in areas that, you know, have opportunity for accessibility, not just now, but also into the future. Sub 500 price point, we like the southern areas of the Moreton Bay region simply because there is a university precinct going in at Petrie. That's a priority development area for the state government. So lots of employment and economic growth will be seen in the coming years in that area. We've also got reducing vacancy rate. So, you know, the demand for properties in that area for renters is increasing, and that's putting upward pressure on yields as well. So there's some good prospects in that region. Areas closer to the CBD that are accessible by train are the areas that we're generally concentrating on. To the north, some of those areas include the corridors along the Ferngrove train line, including Enoggera, Gaythorne, Mitchelton. Kapera does have some upside potential. There are some bigger developments that have recently gone into the planning phase for some medium density housing in that area. That'll increase the supply. To the north, areas around Virginia and Geebung have some good upside potential. To the south, we look at corridors along the proposed metro line, including Greenslopes, Holland Park and Holland Park West. So there's certainly lots of different pockets of opportunity throughout Brisbane. And really it comes down to what are the local drivers in those areas that create lifestyle things that people, why do people want to live in that area, and how easy is it to access employment opportunities in those areas?
You mentioned that you guys are starting to see pressure on the rent yields or the rents. What are the rent yields currently like? Are we talking like in Victoria and New South Wales, we have for good areas where there's still potential for growth, we're talking in under 3% in most cases, gross yield. How does that stack up in Queensland market currently?
Yeah, look, certainly our rental yields are a lot more attractive for investors. We've got in those southern areas of the Moreton Bay region, it's not uncommon to have rental yields upward of 5%, they're gross yields. But, you know, this is in an area where we've seen year-on-year capital growth in excess of 5.5% as well over the last 5 years. So it provides a nice balance of capital growth and yield for investors. For those that are looking for a strategy where, you know, they're looking at pockets where capital growth may be a little bit higher, that usually comes at the expense of yield, but we're still seeing yields upward of 4% in some of the areas that are closer to the city in the middle ring suburbs. Again, it comes down to a suburb by suburb analysis when we're looking at those sorts of things for investors, because some suburbs are more desirable for for owners and tenants, and therefore, you know, in those suburbs, yields are generally a little bit better because people will pay a premium just for a particular school catchment or a particular lifestyle. Look, I think that when you are looking at property from an investment perspective, if you can achieve a capital growth and a yield strategy that's quite balanced, then you're really getting the best of both opportunities. It may get harder to target a high capital growth strategy where yields are actually quite low, particularly if Labor are elected and their proposed changes do come into effect in relation to negative gearing and the capital gains tax changes, you know. Whereas for those investors that are looking for decent capital growth but require a decent holding yield, then, you know, certainly some of those areas in the lower end of the Moreton Bay region are really producing a nice balance for them.
It's interesting, Melinda. And I guess I know no one's got a crystal ball here, but personally, let's say, for example, if a client comes to you and say, I don't care about yield in Queensland market, I just want to be able to target a suburb that can give me the maximum potential capital growth return later on the track, would you recommend them to go as close to CBD as possible, or would you still try to, I guess, discuss and negotiate a little bit to say, look, you know, towards the lower part of Moreton Bay, as you suggested, you could potentially achieve a balance of yield and growth. What would you be saying in that kind of scenario?
I think it really depends on what the investor's goals are and what their personal circumstances are. You know, if they're a really high income earner and they've got a lot of excess disposable income, then, and capital growth was their primary objective, then, you know, they can potentially forego some of the yield to buy into an area that is closer to the CBD that is historically or has historically shown superior capital growth. And that would be my recommendation in those instances. If it's an investor whose, you know, income may not be as high and therefore it's harder to, you know, hold that property because, again, particularly if the negative gearing changes come into an effect, you know, being, if you're unable to claim offset against the expenses of holding the property in the future, then a more balanced approach may be a better situation for those types of investors. So I think it actually comes down to personal circumstances and what an investor is looking for in terms of their, you know, long-term goals. Some investors have a, you know, shorter time frame in mind, so exit strategies are really important to understand from the outset. And, you know, based on what their goals and circumstances are, I'd recommend a strategy that's personalised to their situation.
How are you guys seeing the next 3 to 5 years panning out for Queensland market? No one's holding you. This is not a financial advice, but what kind of growth are you expecting over the next 3 to 5 years in that market, especially in the pockets which are looking good from investment perspective?
Yeah, good question. And you're right. We can't, you know, look into a crystal ball and predict with certainty what might happen. We can certainly look to the past as an indicator of what might happen, but we tend to, in these instances, refer to some of the research that's put out by larger research companies. Now, BIS Oxford Economics have released their latest update indicating that Brisbane house prices should rise up to 13% over the next 3 years. That's really positive for people that are looking to invest in this area. We've also seen recently Domain have reported that Brisbane is the most searched capital city across Australia in terms of buyer interest. Now, again, that indicates that demand for property in Brisbane is increasing because there's more property or the more people searching for property in this area. So I think all of those sorts of things combined with what we see locally happening on the ground, I mean, there's certainly some properties in sought-after areas where inspections are quite busy. You know, you're bumper to bumper with other people looking at a property. And then in less desirable areas, the days on market are longer and there's not many people turning up to those open homes. So, you know, to answer your question, we don't know with certainty what's going to happen, but we certainly see that there is a lot of interest in Brisbane property. We are personally getting a lot of inquiry from Sydney and Melbourne buyers looking to invest throughout Brisbane and the southeast corner. And the research indicates that we have everything in place to see a certain amount of increase over the next 3 years, which we're really positive that that will come to fruition. It's not a case of if, it's more a case of when. So, yeah, we're just watching and waiting for things to happen. And I certainly think after the federal election this year, it seems to be a bit of a headwind for us at the moment. But once that's put behind us, that will give people more certainty and more confidence to move forward with their investment strategy.
The good thing about the Queensland market is that you can also find some of the properties in some of the rezone areas where you can actually generate the equity as well, rather than relying just on the normal growth. So 13%, if you can get as a normal growth in the next few years, that's pretty awesome. Plus, on top of that, if you are in the right area, which some of the areas you have already mentioned, that can multiply, it can have a multiplier effect.
Yeah, I agree 100% with you, Jazz. There's opportunities, certainly in that southern Moreton Bay Shire, where council have recently rezoned a lot of the land in the area for a higher density use. Now, Moreton Bay is the fastest growing shire across Australia, according to some of the information released by their council. And what we're seeing is increasing population growth in that area, as well as I said before, the development of the new university and a priority development area in and around that precinct. So that council region is projecting a massive influx of people. So they've rezoned the land for a higher and better use. At the moment, there's not much development on that land, and a lot of the residents don't know the true value of the rezoning. So some homes that may be sitting on a block of land from 600 to 800 square metres in size, whilst at the moment it looks like a standard house and land opportunity, the value in the land that's hidden that people don't necessarily see, but you know, we see because this is some of the due diligence that we perform on a property on behalf of our clients, is that, you know, that land may be zoned for higher and better use. For example, it may be zoned for potential townhouse development, unit development, or something more than that. And some of the zoning is for development up to 12 metres, which is three stories, up to 21 metres, which is 5 to 7 stories, or up to 27 metres, which is up to 9 stories. And that's in and around the transport hubs in that southern Moreton Bay Shire. So there's real opportunity in that region at the moment. A lot of buyers, or even a lot of sellers, don't understand the true value or the hidden value in the land simply because of the rezoning. They're some of the opportunities that we're looking for our buyers, because obviously if one of your exit strategies is the option to sell on to a developer, whilst it may not be happening now, in 10 or 15 years, once the region has transformed, the university is operational, you know, further development has taken place, population growth has been, you know, rapidly increasing, there will be a need for higher density living. Then a developer will pay a premium for a site that they can knock down an existing home and potentially build 4 townhouses or something more. So there's certainly those sorts of opportunities in that southern Moreton Bay Shire.
So, Melinda, so my understanding is based on around the Petrie University area, there's been a lot of townhouses that's been popping up for the last couple of years. And I know, especially with the blocks around the Petrie suburb, they've been commanding very premium prices. So do you think it's a bit late now in terms of trying to snatch up an actual development block or something that can be subdivided or has got that kind of future potential at this point in time?
I don't think it's too late. We're still finding opportunities under $500,000 with yields upward of 5% that have development potential. So, you know, even as a standard house and land, they're a good buy and hold investment for anyone that's looking in that region, and an easy hold because of the yield that they're generating. And whilst there has been a lot of townhouse development over recent years in and around that region, most of that's been to 2 levels, and the new zoning permits development up to 3 levels. So that's for townhouses, and then unit development up to 21 or 27 metres. It's a much greater or a much higher density of use for that land. And whilst one house may not sell to a single development, what we're going to see in the future is an amalgamation of sites around those transport nodes to sell to developers to build much higher density living. We only have to look at other university precincts around Australia to see, you know, the influx of students that move to an area and how they like to live, and therefore, you know, the opportunities that may be present in some of those other sites with higher density zoning.
Very good point. And I guess in terms of those townhouses, I know when I was looking into the area, the vacancy rate was an upshot of about 4%, even close to 5%. I believe that's been coming down now, isn't it? What's the latest, yes. What's the latest vacancy rates around for those? You know, because I think if we look at vacancy rate, for example, on SQM research, they're lumping up all the households. So basically it's including apartments, townhouses and houses. So it's very difficult to try to segregate each. But because you're on the ground, are you seeing those townhouses also being rented out now, and therefore the vacancy rate slowly trending down now?
I don't generally look at the townhouse market because we're not buying townhouses for our investor clients. We are buying the houses. So, but look, for example, a property that we recently purchased was in a suburb called Moorumba Downs, and the vacancy rate there is currently at 2.2%, and it's trending down. So, another property that we recently purchased in Kalanga, at the time of purchase, the previous tenancy was at $380 per week. The property was purchased and settled, re-advertised, and our client achieved a rental return of $420 per week. And that simply because of the demand for that type of home in the area was, you know, there was more renters looking for the property than properties available. So it depends on the quality of the asset, like any good investment. We sort of generally don't recommend properties that don't appeal to the owner-occupier. We still like properties to be livable, comfortable, and, you know, at the premium end, if you like, within that local market. So you're not looking at rundown homes. You're really looking at quality, you know, low-set brick and tile homes, four bedrooms, two garages, possibly up to two bathrooms. They rent very well. So it's not just about the area. It's also about the asset selection and ensuring that you're, you know, if you are looking to invest in the area, that you're buying the type of asset that's desired by the population that want to live there. There's some school catchments in that area as well that, you know, are favoured over other, or there's school catchments that have an enrolment management scheme. So if you're buying within that school catchment as opposed to the general state school there, people will pay a premium because the property is located in that area as well. So there's so many different factors that, you know, we look at to determine whether a property is investment grade versus just any property that, you know, may be located in a particular suburb.
I know you've mentioned quite a few areas over here and everyone's got a favourite. I think I've already got an idea of what your favourite is, but for our listeners, which one is your most favourite from an investment perspective at the moment?
Yeah, look, I think I've got two favourites. Can I share two? I've got a favourite in the sub 500 price point, and then I've got a favourite in the sort of $700,000 to $800,000 price point, and I'll share both of those with you. So, for investors that have up to $500,000 to spend as the purchase price for the property, our favourite at the moment is definitely in the Southern Moreton Bay area, and we like the strategy of buying a quality home that has a decent holding yield in a suburb that has had year-on-year capital growth in excess of 5%, land-banked suburb, so there's no spare land around, no more developable land left. So that does exclude some of the areas in and around that university precinct, on a train line, and also locking in the potential to sell to a developer in the future. So locking in that additional land value that no one's really paying a premium for right now. So we're talking nice residential estates in that local area that have the potential to be developed further in years to come. That's my favourite strategy in the sub 500 price point. In the $700,000 to $800,000 price point, or, you know, anything above $500,000, I'm liking mid-ring suburbs in Brisbane that are on train lines or on the proposed Brisbane Metro line. The reason for that is at the moment there's certain suburbs that, you know, others are recommending in and around Brisbane that are not on public transport lines. They are on bus lines but not trains or the proposed Metro line. Brisbane is a very drivable city right now, but with the projected population growth and the number of people that are moving to Brisbane, our roads are going to become clogged, our transport system will be tested, and therefore accessibility to public transport is going to become more important into the future. So for our investors that are looking at $500,000 to $800,000 price point, we're certainly looking at corridors along the train lines in the mid-ring suburbs of Brisbane that have good access to parkland, good school catchments, and, you know, desirable amenities such as cafe precincts, accessibility to shopping, those sorts of things.
That's some good tips. And for people who are interested trying to invest into the Queensland market, what are the three biggest tips for them?
I think understand that supply and demand works at a local level. So I know I follow a lot of property chat forums, and I see a lot of property investors recommending certain areas and regions in and around Brisbane, but people need to understand the local drivers of supply and demand. There's certainly a lot of, there's an abundance of land in some areas around Brisbane, which puts pressure on, or it means that the supply of available housing is potentially unlimited until that land is all used up. So first thing is understand local supply and demand drivers. Understand school catchments. People will pay a premium in Brisbane now and into the future for good school catchment zones. That's really important for people to understand. And just because you're in a suburb does not mean you're in that school catchment if that suburb has its own state school. It's really important that you check Queensland education school boundary catchment zones, because some of our schools are enrolment managed and people will pay a premium to buy a home in that area and also to rent a home in that area. The third thing that I would say is, you know, if you can afford it, get expert help, because people that can help to guide you to the right sorts of opportunities and perform the due diligence for you. We have a lot of impacts on property here in Brisbane. We've not yet forgotten the impact that flooding can have on some of our homes. You know, purchasing a property, for example, in a flood zone can significantly hinder the potential for, you know, long-term capital growth if we do have another significant flood event, that sort of thing. And it's just important for investors to be aware of what they're buying and uncover all of the things that you may not be able to see at face value or just by looking at the property online or by inspecting the property. It's really understanding what lies underneath in the council overlays and the planning schemes and what impacts that property may have. So they're my three pointers.
The first two really require the third one, which is the expert help. So right. So the starting one is the expert help, I'll say.
I've got a specific question for you, Melinda. I guess from a Sydney investment perspective, you know, like we've been sticking to ritual of buying close to train stations. But for the southern investors wanting to look at the northern, especially in particular the southeast Queensland corridor, how important is train lines for an investment property?
Look, as I mentioned before, at the moment, Brisbane's a very drivable city and a lot of people do commute to employment by car. We don't see that being the case in the years to come, because as we become a higher density living city, there'll be more and more cars on the road and our roads will become, you know, jam-packed. So people will have to, by default, rely on our public transport systems more in the future, more so than they're relying on them at the moment. So that's why, you know, certainly, you know, we see Brisbane as a baby sister or a baby brother to both Sydney and Melbourne, and we can see what the traffic problems are in those two cities. Well, Brisbane is growing rapidly and, you know, in the future we will have the same issues. So we always look for accessibility to public transport for investors, because most people with property are not looking to sell tomorrow or next year. They're looking to sell, you know, 20 or 30 years from now, and that's when public transport accessibility is going to make all the difference to property values. And also, let's not forget the proposed infrastructure that's coming into Brisbane. We've got the Cross River Rail, which is extending our existing rail network to new locations. So whilst they might not service now, they will be in the near future, as well as the Brisbane Metro. Again, whilst it's not being serviced now, it will be in the future. So sometimes it's good to buy property in areas where we know the infrastructure is coming and it's funded. because you can ride the wave once people actually realise that something's going in. You're already invested in that area and you get the opportunity for any, you know, upside convenience that results from that. Look, we've got a second runway being constructed as we speak. That will allow Brisbane to, you know, be an international destination. We've got Queen's Wharf Project, which is a multi-billion dollar tourism spot on our Brisbane, on the Brisbane Riverbank. That's going to have casinos, five-star hotels and a huge entertainment precinct. We've got the Howard Street Wharf Project that is underway, the Cross River Rail, which I've already mentioned. We've got the Brisbane Metro, which is development that is funded and in place. I think recently Scott Morrison announced a fast rail from Brisbane to the Gold Coast. So all of these types of projects deliver jobs for our local economy and result in more people wanting to come to Brisbane. It puts Brisbane on the map. And I think some people have even referred to Brisbane as being the next international destination or the next world city. And certainly if that, you know, eventuates, hopefully some of these bigger projects will put Brisbane on the map. And, you know, the more people do come to visit, the more it drives our local economy. And, you know, obviously the more it helps our property values to go up.
Surely, that's great. And how is the, are you guys seeing any improvement in the mining sector as well, or that's still fairly flat since the last boom it had?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we certainly saw a lot of the big mining jobs that were located in the capital here in Brisbane. They just all dissolved after the mining boom sort of softened. And we certainly had a lot of good friends that have moved overseas because, you know, the jobs that they had here in Brisbane were just no longer available. So I think as mining picks up, the opportunity for employment here in the city, you know, on the back end of mining will continue to increase. But I think Brisbane was very dependent on the mining industry in the past, whereas now I think that we have diversified more and we're not so dependent on that industry to hold us up in terms of the job prospects and job opportunities. And there's more diversified opportunities in Brisbane for people across a number of different sectors. And I think that's what makes a healthier economy long term.
I mean, we haven't actually touched on much about Ipswich and Logan, which I was hoping to be able to tip my toes in there, but that's okay. I think we'll leave that for next time and we'll have to bring Melinda back again.
Melinda, thanks for being on the show. That was some great insight into the Queensland market. There are certain areas we haven't covered, but we will get into touch with you once again when we are ready for that. And for the listeners, hope you guys are enjoying the content. If you are, please don't forget to give us the 5-star rating on the iTunes and let the word spread like a fire. Spark your fire. Thanks for being on the show, David, Melinda. Anything else? Last words? Wisdom words?
No, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure. And look, if anyone would like further information about Brisbane, happy to help.
Yep, and if anyone wants to get in touch with Melinda, please email David or I, and we'll pass on the details to Melinda. That's where it ends. Thanks, everyone. Cheers.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.